It is Friday, August the 31st. This is VOA's International Edition. Good to have you with us. Coming up, remembering an American senator and war hero.
Personally, I think that everyone has a calling to do something at some point. And John McCain heard his when he was a prisoner of war.
Impending offensive and an ominous development in Syria.
Close to 1 million people will be probably displaced, and probably many of them will be facing starvation.
The Queen of Soul laid to rest later today, plus the sounds of Bonnie Raitt. Addressing an estimated 3,500 mourners in the U.S. city of Phoenix, Arizona, former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden recalled what he described as the sheer joy that crossed his face when he knew he was about to take to the stage of the Senate floor and start a fight with John McCain. Biden, a Democrat who was among the vast number of friends, both Democrats and Republicans, of Republican Senator John McCain, who died last weekend after a long fight against brain cancer. Biden spoke at the memorial service in Phoenix.
With John, it was a value set that was neither selfish nor self-serving. John understood that America was first and foremost an idea, audacious and risky, organized around not tribe, but around ideals.
The memorial service in Phoenix will be followed by the body of Senator McCain lying in state at the U.S. Capitol here in Washington. A funeral service will take place at the Washington National Cathedral, and he'll be buried Sunday at the U.S. Navy Academy in Annapolis, which is not far from Washington, Annapolis, Maryland. Following in the footsteps of his father and grandfather, McCain entered the United States Naval Academy. He graduated in 1958. Later, he served as a Navy fighter pilot in Vietnam, where he was shot down by the enemy and held captive for nearly 6 years in a North Vietnamese prison and tortured repeatedly. Everyone who has spoken of praise for John McCain since his death last Saturday has called him a war hero. My colleague Lori London spoke with longtime Arizona radio personality and current radio syndicator Barry Young. Young knew McCain well and talks about his death's impact on Arizona and its people.
You know, the people of Arizona, I think, realize that some people are called to greatness. Personally, I think that everyone has a calling to do something at some point, and John McCain heard his when he was a prisoner of war.
But what's the feeling there in Arizona? What are people saying? What are they feeling? What was John McCain to Arizona besides a senator for decades, and obviously he loved the state?
There are two probably fundamental feelings in the state at this time. We have a contingent of people who live here who are extremely right-wing and believe that he was disloyal from time to time. And then you have a greater number of people who understand that John McCain followed the calling of his heart, what he felt was right to do, I mean, deeply right for the country. He felt something was bigger than him. Whatever cause he took up was bigger than him. And that's, if you stop and go back and look at his last appearance before the United States Senate, that was his message to the United States Senate. We have to act in the best interest of the country. So that's the feeling that you have here. If you run into people who are complacent and they say, well, he was disloyal, the greater majority of people, they always voted for him, and they sent him back for 6 terms. There's a feeling of great loss in the state today.
You attended some services and memorials. You knew him personally. I understand he was funny. He was kind. He had a temper. From your perspective, from the times that you were able to have one-on-one time with him, meet with him, or just know him and talk to him, what can you say on a personal level?
Well, he had an incredible sense of humor, and his sense of humor was so offbeat that it was somewhat off-putting if you didn't understand him. When I remember the first time I visited his offices in Washington, D.C., he introduced me to one of his very close employees, and he said, "We're so proud of them. They're back from their, from their third leave for, I don't know, he made off-color jokes from time to time. They're back from his third leave from alcoholism." And I looked shocked, and everybody started laughing. And this was the John McCain. It's kind of a naval thing, kind of a guy thing. And he was very irreverent. His jokes were very dry, delivered with a, almost as if everything was serious. You had to really understand where he was coming from. He had a legendary temper. If he got angry with you, it might go on for a year, maybe two. And then everything would be okay again.
But my understanding is, though, even when he disagreed, even when he got angry about issues that he cared about, he never made it personal.
Well, it was only personal if you were very, very close and personal with him. Then it would be personal. But if it was an issue affecting the country, an issue like Affordable Health Care Act that we call Obamacare, or an issue with what will be our exit strategy with Iraq, would we do the surge, which he convinced George Bush to do, or would we just sort of pull out and slowly diminish our presence there? That was where he was passionate, and that was not personal. He was old school. Members of the Senate could have violent disagreements with him on the floor of the Senate, vigorous debates, angry words would be exchanged within the confines of the formality of the Senate, and yet they would go out and have dinner together 3 hours later. They're buddies. They were always collaborators, trying to work in the best interest of the country. We don't see that much anymore.
Barry Young, a longtime Arizona radio personality, currently a radio syndicator, he was speaking with VOA's Lori London. This is VOA.
Childhood cancers are highly curable, with long-term survival rates as much as 80%. But for pediatric cancer patients living in refugee camps, access to care is a daunting prospect. On Press Conference USA, we'll speak with two doctors from St. Jude Children's Research Hospital about their global efforts to continue care for displaced pediatric cancer patients. Listen to us Saturday and Sunday on Press Conference USA, only on The Voice of America.
Savor the flavor of African music. I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
This is VOA's International Edition. There are growing signs of an imminent assault by pro-government forces in Syria on the last remaining major rebel stronghold in northwest Idlib province. It was prompted expressions, many of them, of alarm. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned of a risk for a humanitarian catastrophe. The UN said an additional 700,000 Syrian civilians could be displaced, adding to the millions already uprooted by the seven-year conflict. Heather Nord is the U.S. State Department spokesperson.
What we are concerned about is not just a potential chemical weapons attack, but we're concerned about the threat, any kind of escalation of violence in Idlib. That would put civilians and civilian infrastructure in Idlib at risk. We have shared the concerns that we have about any potential offensive taking place. We've shared those concerns with the Russian government at many levels, from Secretary Pompeo to his counterpart, to Chairman Dunford, also to Secretary Mattis, National Security Advisor Bolton, and others. So we've made our position on that very clear. In addition to that, our new Syrian envoy, Ambassador Jim Jeffries, has discussed that as well with some of his counterparts.
Alam Payan is director of the Middle East Studies Center at Ohio State University. He tells VOA's Victor Beatty this impending offensive is an ominous development.
Because there are almost 3 million people in Idlib, and it is bordering Turkey too. When they talk about the rebels, these are a group of people who are opposing Bashar al-Assad and his government, and they're opposing Russia's involvement, and they're opposing the Iranian involvement. So these are some of the groups who are nationalists. And there are some jihadi groups there too. So that's what their attack is now, not only on the jihadi and that what they call the terrorists, but some others that who are opposition in the opposition areas of the, I mean, opposition to Bashar al-Assad. Close to 1 million people will be probably displaced, and probably many of them will be facing starvation. Other danger is that probably that the government is using chemical agents on those people.
That's what the U.S. State Department spokesperson expressed on Wednesday. Quote, we are concerned not just about a potential chemical weapons attack, but we're also concerned about any kind of escalation of violence that will put civilians and infrastructure at risk.
Yes. The amazing situation here is that there was in Kazakhstan's capital, Astana, there were these three guarantors, Russia, Turkey, and Iran. These three countries thought that they should avoid humanitarian catastrophe. Now the United Nations is concerned, and everyone else in that neighborhood, there is a huge concern that this kind of catastrophe probably will, in somehow, there will be a ripple effect of that in the neighboring countries. And the most important thing is that Russia is denying that the chemical agents are not used, and they're blaming the white helmet guys, those rescuers that who are very famous in the world, doing excellent job in taking care of the civilians and children and others that who are under the rebel after bombardment by Russia, by Iran, by the Bashar al-Assad government. And now Russia is blaming these white helmet rescuers, just like the Soviet Union was denying in Afghanistan. Well, some of us that who have watched Russia, Soviet Union's involvement in Afghanistan, Russia used chemical agents, and finally they were blaming the Mujahideen and others in America and CIA, and somehow deflecting that the Afghan government at that time, with the pro-Soviet government of Afghanistan, they were using the chemical agents, and Russia and the Soviet Union was denying it.
There's a concern by Turkey, of course. This territory borders Turkey, and Turkey has a small force there. Could this disrupt the warming relations between Moscow and Ankara?
Yeah, it would. Turkey is already hosting 2.5 million Syrians, and there will be another wave of these people going to Turkey, and Turkey will suffer from that.
Ohio State University scholar Alam Payan speaking with VOA's Victor Beatty. He also said it's very clear that Russia, as well as Syria and Iran, are disregarding, basically, international calls for a political settlement and choosing to pursue a purely military victory. He said it's vital to Moscow and Bashar al-Assad to remain in power to ensure its naval base in Tartus is preserved.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
The funeral for renowned entertainer Aretha Franklin will be held later today in the U.S. city of Detroit, where she died from complications of pancreatic cancer on August 16th. AP's Ed Donahue reporting.
The line for public viewing stretched more than a half mile. A white 1940s Cadillac hearse brought the casket of the Queen of Soul into the church. Joyce Stroud traveled from Florida to Detroit.
It was absolutely beautiful. She was in a bronze casket this time, and a lovely suit, and she looked at peace.
Friend Michael Eric Dyson was asked, what would Aretha Franklin think about all this attention?
It would be truly humbling to her, although let's not forget she was a diva. So the diva will be respected and the diva will be recognized.
Among those who will be at Aretha Franklin's funeral, Stevie Wonder, Jennifer Hudson, and former President Bill Clinton. I'm Ed Donahue.
The moment I wake up, before I pull on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. And while combing my hair now, and wondering what dress to wear now, I say a little prayer for you. Forever, forever, you'll stay in my heart, and I will love you forever.
Franklin had an amazing voice, you have to admit. Dionne Warwick will be among the many at Aretha Franklin's funeral later today. I Say a Little Prayer was actually Warwick's big hit. It was a super hit for her, and she and Aretha, very good friends. Aretha said many times it was her favorite song of all songs that are out there, and she loved to sing it. She sang it every time she got a chance. This is VOA.
This is BizBeat.
Kamal Hassan Haddad is crafting glass in a shop with a name that's been around for more than 50 years. The family name is renowned for glassmaking in Egypt, but the family business in Cairo is facing serious trouble. First of all, he says, there's the economic recession, but also a lack of tourism. It's very rare to find any tourists around. Our factory even used to have tourist guides. High gas prices are also taking a toll. His father, Hassan, started the business and became so famous a movie was made about it. I've been granted lots of international certificates from Europe, he says. The old monuments in Egypt require my special attention to restore the old glass my father and grandfather used to work with. Earlier in life, Hassan was into boxing and made a lot of money in the sport before ultimately carrying on the family legacy, one that could be on its last leg. For VOA's BizBeat, I'm Philip Alexio.
This is VOA's International Edition. It's so good to have you with us. Now it's time for a little something from the world of music. Bonnie Raitt is an American singer, songwriter, and musician. Her music has elements of blues, rock, folk, and country, including super hits like Something to Talk About. Raitt has received 10 Grammy Awards and ranks well on Rolling Stone's list of the 100 greatest singers of all time. Rolling Stone also has her among the 100 greatest guitarists of all time. Bonnie was born in Burbank, California, the daughter of the Broadway musical star John Raitt and his first wife, pianist Marjorie Haydock. In 1967, she entered Radcliffe College and later became friends with blues promoter Dick Waterman. And during her second year of college, Bonnie took a semester off and moved to Philadelphia with Waterman and other local musicians. She says it was an opportunity that changed everything. And everything is exactly what she always delivers in songs like I Can't Make You Love Me with Bruce Hornsby on piano.
Turn down the bed. Turn down.
2012, Bonnie Raitt, Tracy Chapman, and Beth Hart honored American blues guitarist and singer Buddy Guy, an exponent of the Chicago blues scene. They sang the song Sweet Home Chicago from center stage at the 35th annual Kennedy Center Honors. You know, I really love it when she brings math in there. 6 and 2 is 8. Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? Bonnie Raitt, amazing voice. Hey, many thanks, everyone, for joining us here on International Edition. We're right here on the Voice of America. Always good to have you here. Latest world news is straight ahead, so we hope you'll stay tuned. For our director, Tracy Carter, and engineer, Dave Magnus, I'm Steve Norman. We're all in Washington hoping you have a super Friday. Now a bit more from Bonnie Raitt.
6 and 2 is 8. She tricked you one time, she's gonna do it again. Come on, baby, don't you wanna go back to the same old place, sweet home Chicago. Come on, baby, don't you wanna go.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The enduring defeat of ISIS remains a top priority for the United States. The U.S.-led global coalition to defeat ISIS is leading stabilization efforts that consolidate military gains, restore basic essential services, and enable Syrians to voluntarily and safely return to their homes in Raqqa and other former ISIS strongholds. Assistance includes explosive hazard and rubble removal, providing clean water, rehabilitating electricity networks, and other basic necessities. Since April, the United States has elicited approximately $300 million in contributions and pledges from coalition partners to support immediate stabilization and early recovery initiatives in areas liberated from ISIS in northeast Syria, including a generous contribution of $100 million by Saudi Arabia and $50 million by the United Arab Emirates. As a result of these generous contributions and other factors, State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert announced the U.S. will redirect $230 million in stabilization funds for Syria, which have been under review. This decision does not represent any lessening of U.S. commitment to our strategic goals in Syria, stressed Ms. Nauert. President Donald Trump has made clear that the U.S. is prepared to remain in Syria until the enduring defeat of ISIS, and the U.S. remains focused on ensuring the withdrawal of Iranian forces and their proxies. We believe, said Ms. Nauert, that neither of these events will happen without irreversible progress toward a political resolution of the conflict, in accordance with U.N. Security Council Resolution 2254. This decision does not affect U.S. humanitarian assistance. The United States is the largest single humanitarian donor for the Syrian response, providing more than $8.6 billion in humanitarian assistance since the start of the crisis for those displaced inside Syria and the region. The U.S. will also continue to work with its international partners towards the achievement of a peaceful resolution of the Syrian conflict under a UN-led political process. The Syrian people deserve a country free of war, human rights abuses, and terrorism.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.